Welcome to WJR's Internet Advisor Podcast. Catch the live show weekends on News Talk 760 WJR and online at internetadvisor.net.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at internetadvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now, it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor. We have got a show and a half for you today. We're going to be talking about some cloud computing. We'll be talking about turning in an iPad for a Kindle. Heresy. And we'll be talking about the technology leaders from the Midwest coming to our area. All that and more coming up here on the Internet Advisor. Please don't go away. It's all coming up for you. Welcome once again to the Internet Advisor. It is a veritable digital zoo back here as we're swapping devices and getting ourselves ready for the show. I'm so glad there is no video attached to this because it would be crazy. Gary Baker, our team is here in studio. Gary Baker, glad to have you here with
us. Testing am I. I got it.
Tasting. 1, 2, 3. Okay, Cal Carson is here as well. Hi, Cal.
Ta-da!
And to top it all off, we've also got probably the best looking of all of our team here, and that is Emily Hay from Emily Hay's Hey There Social Media. Emily, thank you for joining us.
Hey there, Foster. How are you guys today?
Oh, we're doing great. Listen, we thought about getting you in here early in the show, matter of fact, because we have a ton of other guests.
Sure.
But we wanted you to comment on a huge thing that happened this week in social media, which was that Facebook gobbled up what we heard last week from our college co-eds who were in here was like the next wave of social media. Tell us about that.
Can you believe it? Did Instagram hit the startup sweepstakes or what?
Oh, my. No kidding. Those guys, they walked away $1 billion.
Just a modest billion.
Yeah, but a billion doesn't go as far as it used to.
Yeah, but the guy who was, I guess, one of the president. The key man in the whole process gets $400 million, just $400 million. And he's what, 26, 28?
Yeah, just a couple co-founders.
He had the idea.
He can live off the interest for the rest of his life. Oh, my word. It's just incredible.
Exactly.
So what is it about, like Instagram, the young ladies last week were telling us, was kind of like the next thing in social media. What is it about Instagram that made it so valuable?
Yeah, how did they know, right?
Sure. And so what we're talking about here, so Instagram, it's a free photo sharing app. Plain and simple. And it's something that, you know, like all good social media programs, it has caught on like wildfire just because it's so darn easy and it's so darn fun.
So that's it? that's worth $1 billion?
Well, we can talk a little further about this. So just in case anyone isn't familiar with Instagram, you can take photos from your iPhone, and now they have it available for Androids. So you take a photo with your mobile device, and you use Instagram to put a cool filter, or you add a cool effect to your photo, so you can make it black and white, or put a cool border around it, or really you see all those tones that you can add to make a photo look very vintage. It just makes a photo look cool. And then you can upload it and share it to Facebook. You can share it on Twitter. You can share it on Tumblr from there.
Well, you know, so, I just Googled Instagram, and it didn't even come up number one on the, you know, this is a new company, it seems.
Oh,
like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if when I Googled it, it definitely came up, but one thing, you know, Facebook just said, okay, so we know that photo sharing is one of the most important activities that people use Facebook for. You know, people love sharing photos.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so Instagram found a nice way to get people to conduct all of their photo sharing activity from mobile devices. So Facebook saw that piece of real estate that Instagram was claiming by way of mobile as something that would be very valuable to keep people engaged with Facebook.
Mm, I see. Okay.
Cal. Awesome. So I can do things with all these things with photos that I could do with Instagram that I've been able to do it in my Mac already. That's even better.
But,
that's pretty cool.
But now you can do it on your phone.
Exactly.
Yeah. In fact, I know in a couple hours or down the road when you get the article that I put together.
By the way, I've got it. Excuse me. I got it, and I was able to post it. So it's up online. We did a little quick juggling of things, but if you want to see folks at internetadvisor.net, if you go there right now, there is a news item that is down below our show notes, and it says Facebook gobbles up Instagram. And that first article, and in there, Emily has outlined some of the things we're talking about. So go ahead, you can refer to that because people will be able to see that now.
Yeah, just so everyone knows, I just wanted to point out what it looks like when you're on Facebook. If you're a Facebook user, you might not even realize that a lot of the photos you're looking at are being shared by your Facebook friends through Instagram. So you'll notice now, even with the screenshots in that article, or now that you're aware of it, going forward, Facebook photos, when they're up on Facebook, you'll see shared via Instagram. And like I said, you'll start to notice those cool effects that you're able to add.
Well, what does it mean for those of us who have Facebook right now? And like today, yesterday we were out for a nature walk and I uploaded something on this, you know, where are you right now? You know, posting something about yourself. Will it now be labeled Instagram? Will I be able to do extra things with my photos that I haven't been able to do before?
Sure. So you're an iPhone user, aren't you, Foster?
Right, right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So you can get the Instagram app for your iPhone, and you snap a photo on your nature walk, and you decide to then upload it. You upload it to your Instagram, but then you share it to Facebook. So same motion, essentially, as sharing a photo through a Facebook app. But again, with Instagram, it's worth the little step to be able to add a pretty border or an effect to it.
Okay.
And then you share it on Facebook. And over time, also in the article, there's a screenshot of it. But over time, you'll see on your Facebook profile that you'll have a whole album starting that's called Instagram Photos.
So
instead of uploaded via mobile, uploaded via Instagram.
I gotcha. Okay, Kel?
Emily, can I use Instagram and not be a Facebook user?
Absolutely. In fact, they have their own little social network. So, you know, when you're using Instagram and you take your photo, you are simply sharing it with other people that you're connected with through Instagram. It's that extra step that Facebook saw. Instagram users were sharing their Instagram photos over on Facebook. So you do not have to be a Facebook user to use Instagram.
But will that mean that they'll have to eventually, you know, kill that social aspect of it on Instagram? If it's Facebook, I mean, they don't want, it's essentially, isn't it competing? Well, they bought it. It's not competing with
them
anymore.
Doesn't matter anymore.
Right. They are saying that they're going to run Instagram independently, which is a good sign Mr. Zuckerberg wants it to keep its integrity.
Emily, you've done it again. Thank you so much for jumping in here at the start of the program and giving us this information. And again, folks, you can simply go to internetadvisor.net. The first article under the news is Facebook gobbles up Instagram, or you can go to the top to social media, click that, and you'll find out about that. Back in just a minute to talk about the Midwest technology leaders.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. You can find more resources to protect your computer on our webpage at internetadvisor.net.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. As always, good to have you with us here. And we have just got a jam-packed program. Just before we talk with our next guest, I want to remind you, Emily told me this just before she left, that you can get, she suggested that you take a picture of yourself and then post it through Instagram on our homepage at Internet Advisor. By the way, you can go to Facebook, and we have a homepage there, Internet Advisor.
On our Facebook page.
On
our
Facebook page, right. Yes. And then just go to that Facebook page and post yourself, you know, a little picture of you from Instagram. Kind of a fun way of getting into the whole thing. All right. Well, Gary, we've got somebody in studio here that we have had the pleasure of speaking with on a number of occasions before. She's a lovely lady, brought somebody along with her to help. And it's about an event coming up that each year we try to let people know about because it's a very important technology event taking place right here in Southeast Michigan.
Well, that's right. And they've both been here a number of times before and quite a dynamic duo. And that's Tracy Ann and Rob Palmer. Thank you for coming in and being our guest today.
It's great to be back. It's wonderful to see you guys again. Foster, it's been too long.
It has
first
been.
First time meeting like this.
Or keep meeting like
this. That's right.
Well, and we're here to talk about the 8th Annual Midwest Technology Leader Symposium that's coming up for the 8th year now on May 3rd.
I cannot actually believe it's been 8 years.
It's
been 8 years.
It's been a great run. Better and better every single year. And this promises to be the best yet, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about, you know, we say it's the Midwest Technology Leaders, and it's really about the top of the IT leadership group, CIOs or an equivalent, and we get together for what's part of the program?
Yeah, that's right. So just a little bit of quick history. We have this incredible IT community in town.
Absolutely.
Lot of
information
senior.
Technology, by
information
the way.
Information technology,
use that
yes.
A lot, so might as well say it's information technology, and that can include a whole bunch of things.
Whole bunch of things, right? And we have this incredible community here of senior leadership that have actually been, you know, they've got the war stories, right? They've done it, they've done everything, and they're continuing to obviously grow because mobility is coming in, and all the things around just development and, you know, crazy, crazy stuff happening.
More and more to learn, right?
Absolutely.
And where's best to learn it?
Midwest Technology Leaders, right, exactly. So we bring this incredible community together. It's put on by the community. I mean, we're just the facilitators.
That's a very good point, Rob, that this really is the community of IT people themselves getting together and saying, we want to have a place to network. And this is at the St. John's Conference Center on May 3rd. That's where you're going to have it.
That's right. Yep. And we have a wonderful group of advisory board members that are from the community, IT leaders, and we really grasp a lot of information from them.
Do you have to be a big shot to get in there?
I mean,
like Gary Baker?
Yes, like Gary Baker.
Obviously not, because as a matter of full disclosure, I've been asked by these guys to serve on the executive board again this year, which is wonderful, because there really are some really wonderful technology talent that does serve on the board, and then you let me come too.
Well, I want to just comment on that, though, because one of the things we've incorporated is, yes, you do have to be in a, you know, senior level position. It's invite only, good. Right? So you have to be a director, VP of IT, CIO. Mm-hmm. But one of the components we've included is the nonprofit We Build Character has a mentoring program. So now the mentees get to come network with all the CIOs.
Wow.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it is wonderful. And that's a great group. And the mentees themselves have done a wonderful job. And there was an event this morning.
There was. They were actually at Davenport mentoring graduates at Davenport.
So the mentees.
This is Davenport University, right?
The mentees are now mentors to the next level down.
That's wonderful.
Well, we need to pay it forward, pay it back.
Yeah, right. We
need that because, you know, the problem is the generations in our workforce, right? Generation X can't cover the next layer of leadership. So we really got to work on that, right? And that's something we're going to be discussing at Midwest Technology Leaders, which Rob can tell you
more about.
Right,
developing that kind of thing, Rob, right? Yeah. Developing that culture, essentially?
Yes, and we have a couple of different topics that are going to be discussed there on adaptive leadership, mentoring, and our Birds of a Feather roundtable.
This is really critical, isn't it? For our area in particular, we could say in general, but it almost seems like Detroit and Michigan are kind of reinventing themselves as this really a digital hub. I think of what they talked about, the electronic ring around Boston in maybe the 70s and 80s. It almost seems like, if you will, Detroit's becoming a cloud community.
Well, absolutely.
GE came here a few years ago. Mm-hmm. They're hiring 1,100 or more IT workers, and it is the largest IT factory that, and I say factory, you know, people factory, mm-hmm. but it's the largest that GE has anywhere in the world.
That's an old campus.
And that's right here. They're out at Grace Lake, which is part of, it was the old Visteon headquarters.
That's what I thought, Visteon, right. Exactly.
But there's a lot of others, Galaxy, right?
And, Detroit Labs.
And we could go on and on, but there are a lot of companies that came here because it's the near shore.
That's right.
We've got great talent here that wasn't fully utilized.
Gary,
and now it's really
you
hard
and I
to get
listened
a
to a great speech by the guy from Galaxy, wasn't it?
Right.
And we had him on
the
air, as a matter of fact. And what he was talking about is instead of, you know, outsourcing, insourcing, and matter of fact, he told us that's why he came to Detroit, was because this is where he could find the talent, and especially with our schools that we have here, it's kind of exciting to see this bubbling up now and really beginning to sparkle and getting some traction as well.
Yeah,
and you see just the vitality that's entering in, and we can't find enough IT workers.
Oh, we can't. Oh, it's crazy.
I was
it's
at
crazy.
A CIO kitchen cabinet meeting that Dave Behan, our state of Michigan CIO, has pulled together. There was a meeting yesterday, and 14 of us around the table, all of us have job openings, and we can't fill them. There's over 8,000 jobs on the job board at MEDC, and we can't fill them. And that's part of what Midwest Technology Leaders is talking about. It's how do we go about finding, growing, training our people, as well as a lot of other things that CIOs and other leaders of technology need, right?
Yeah, exactly. And Rob can give you just a quick sort of snapshot on the agenda, because, of course, security is another big thing, right?
Let me just quickly say, by the way, folks, if you're hearing this and you're in a position as an IT leader that you'd like to be involved in this, you can register. You can just click on our homepage. And on our homepage, you'll see on the show notes there that where it says May 3rd, at St. John's Conference Center. Just click on that. It'll take you to the right page where you can get registration and also find out more about this. But go ahead and finish what you were going to say.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to talk about some of the different topics that we have and some of the speakers that we have. And Rich Strader is the Director of IT and Security for Ford. Mm-hmm. So he's going to be talking a lot about global security and some of the challenges that they face inside of Ford.
Yeah.
Big thing.
Huge problem.
And Lawrence Orens from Gartner, he's a Gartner analyst, is going to be talking about consumerization and bringing mobile devices into places and the security that you have to deal with going through there. and you can imagine.
Mobile headaches.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, iPads for executives. Yeah, you know, should you allow them to come in?
Bring your own device, BYOD.
Gary,
right?
I remember was the issue about iPhones before because of that the computing power they have.
Yep. Yeah. And one of the great things we have in there is from a gentleman from Cisco, Patrick Gray, talking about a lot of the war stories and a lot of the things that have happened. He used to be on the FBI Security Task Force.
Yeah, that's right.
So he's going to be talking.
Huge, huge issue. Yep. I know we've had Rich Steinen in here talking about cyber warfare. And in essence, it's been going on for a long time. Mm-hmm. And there's some comments I saw the other day about Chinese companies, essentially, or the Chinese government, as a matter of fact, actively for many years having been doing industrial espionage.
Yep.
And essentially stealing a lot of trade secrets.
Yeah. That's what we talked about. I know it.
They're sitting in there taking the trade secrets and no one even knows they're doing it.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the
problem. That's the scary part about it. Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, we couldn't put this conference on every year without the help of some really good companies that year after year step up and help us educate each other, help the CIO network, the IT group. What are some of the sponsors?
So we have Accenture, Comcast Business Class, who's made a huge impact locally here, is our event sponsor. Accenture, Plant Moran is another big part of it again. And then we have some great local companies like FastSwitch, AMI Strategies, and Apex Digital Solutions.
And you'll be able to see a lot of that if you go to that link to the Midwest Technology Leaders Conference, and that's the link off of our homepage. Tracy Ann and Rob Palmer, thank you so much for being here. Good luck on this, and we'll want to have a first-hand report from you and Gary after the whole thing's over.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Thanks,
guys.
Thanks for having us.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. For the latest up-to-the-minute technology news, check out the Internet Advisor's blog at internetadvisor.net.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Cal Carson in studio, and we have some very important people on the line with us as well. We're going to be talking with them about cloud computing and a very special presentation that Mr. Baker will be making with them. So, Gary, I'm going to hand the baton back over to you to help our folks understand what you're going to be involved with.
Absolutely. This is a presentation to the Ross Business School at the University of Michigan, the Alumni Club here in southeastern Michigan. It's going to happen on Thursday the 19th, so this next Thursday. You don't have to be a member of the University of Michigan Alumni Club to come. And when I heard that who I was going to get to speak with, I thought, you know what? I'll bet if we really asked him nicely, we could get these guys to come on the air with us, and they're here. And I'd like to introduce Professor M.S. Krishnan, who is the Joseph Handelman Professor of Information Systems and Innovation at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan. Welcome, Professor Krishnan.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We're really happy to have you. And the other speaker on the docket and also here with us, Mike Klein, who's been here a number of times from Online Tech. He's the president and COO there. Mike, welcome again.
Thanks, Gary. Foster, how are you guys?
Thank you very much. Good to have you. You also are going to be hosting this, I understand, as well.
Yes, we are. We're hosting it at one of our data centers in Ann Arbor.
Oh, that's nice.
So, and as a matter of full disclosure, right, I made some of it, that I'm involved in this, but also, we have a special relationship with Online Tech because they actually host our website here. Mm-hmm. And so we've done many things with Online Tech over the years.
And lots of history there because Gary was kind of at the roots of the founding of what became online technologies many, many, many moons ago.
Back like 19 years ago, I think.
Oh, that's right. It's been a while. Don't tell him. I was a kid, right, Mike?
Tell everybody how old you were.
Yeah, I was a kid when that happened.
He did it while I was in high school.
Yeah, it was just me and a couple of friends, and we got it started. Okay.
Now, what are the three of you going to be handling there at this presentation?
Professor Christian, this is a special treat for us. We get to be on the docket with you, and you kick us off. Tell us a little bit about what we're going to be talking about around cloud computing and some of the new business models that you teach at the business school.
Yeah, I think, I'm going to be starting up with a book that I co-authored with Professor C.K. Prahlad, who's, unfortunately no more, but we wrote that book in 2008. In fact, we started doing the research at least 5 years back, and the book is called The New Age of Innovation.
Mm-hmm.
Why it's called the New Age of Innovation? Because we believe that technology is kind of becoming, the central piece of business innovation. What we said in that book was that, over the last 10 years or so, we've been observing some, kind of four or five, major trends. And if you start putting those trends together, then we thought that probably the structure of the business model that is emerging probably gives us a clue in terms of where the transformation of business and across industries is headed. So our approach to innovation is not about product or service innovation,
mm-hmm.
because we believe that those concepts of product innovation and service innovation, in fact, would be embedded in what we call as the business model innovation.
Yep.
So in short, what we say is that, if you look at the trends like ubiquitous connectivity, more than 4 billion people plus are now connected with some device or the other.
Yes,
right.
Incredible.
Then you have pervasive digitization of business, right? Every aspect mm-hmm. of business is getting digital,
mm-hmm.
Digitized, and that trend is increasing further. Then we have convergence of industries and convergence of technologies. In fact, it is convergence of technologies and hence convergence of industries. You could, pick up the phone in your pocket and ask the question, is it a computer, is it a camera, is it a watch? I'm making the statement because these were all separate industries that used to exist and we used to teach about and learn about how to compete in these industries. There is a special kind of convergence that is happening there, which is fundamentally both challenging and also mm-hmm. transforming industries.
So convergence, convergence is a real key word here, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, convergence is a key word because in this convergence that I'm talking about is, being facilitated primarily through technology, digital technology.
Right. Yeah, I really like the fact that in Chapter 4 you say IT matters. I thought,
yes.
Oh, good. That's a really good thing for me.
As a CIO, he's very happy to hear that.
Right. I think we did choose that, topic and that title for the chapter for a reason because a lot of times, innovation is left at a very high end, at strategy level, right? But if you really want to make things happen, it is, the attention that you provide or to give to IT really matters. And
Professor, am I understanding then, just kind of as a layperson, and you three are speaking at a very high level, but as a layperson, it's kind of saying that the technology around us, this digital technology, which is all pervasive, is transforming even the way that we do business. And that in order to be really on the cutting edge of that business, we have to understand that. And that's the insights that are in your book.
Absolutely. See, because, Gary, what we're talking about is we're saying that businesses are going to move away from the traditional notion of building products and selling products in mass or, delivering service. What we're going to see is that we're going to see the shift in business models to provide this personalized experience with one customer at a time, which we call N equal to one, sample size of one, right?
That's right.
At the same time, we say that companies would be delivering these kinds of experiences not through ownership of all the resources they require, but they would partner with small and large companies, even individuals across the globe, which we call as resources would be global. And in a way, they would actually orchestrate an ecosystem and innovate in that ecosystem to deliver this personalized experience for one customer at a time.
Wow.
Yeah, and this is all, and we're honing right into cloud computing and how cloud computing is really driving innovation of these new business models, right?
That's right. That's right. See, it's very interesting because a lot of times when you talk about cloud computing, a dominant interpretation there is it is going to be an efficiency play and it's going to reduce the cost and I can consolidate my servers. I think that's just a piece of the benefit that you get from cloud computing. I believe that cloud computing is going to be the enabler of business innovation itself because a couple of things. One, cloud computing is going to remove the capital intensity that is of the IT architecture we have been used to traditionally. And second, it is going to bring new levels of flexibility, right? In other words, even a startup company could actually just put together the business processes and services put together on a cloud platform without much of investment. So what we are saying is that it is going to democratize the access to capabilities.
That's interesting. Now, and by the way, Mike Klein, I'm going to say, in terms of those capabilities, Mike's right there with the people who are connecting those people together.
That's right. When we started talking about cloud computing, about giving this presentation, I said, you know, there's another guy that has an MBA from Ross as well, and that's Mike Klein. And by the way, he can help you with cloud computing because, Mike, that's what Online Tech does.
Well, the cloud's got to go somewhere, right?
That's right. So you are the cloud. You're the cloud.
Ladies and gentlemen, right now, this is the cloud. Let me present the cloud to you. His name is Mike.
Data Center conference recently, and somebody was talking about how they were explaining, you know, here's everything's going to the cloud, and the question is, well then you're why are you doing in the data center business? It's all going to go away. It's going to go out to the cloud. Where in fact, you know, the cloud resides in it really is moving it from desktops into data centers and centralizing it to get that level of flexibility.
Mike, that's that democratization that the professor Krishnan was talking about.
Exactly.
That when you can put all of that material in a place where people can access it from anywhere in the globe.
Well, you could always do that, but now as a smaller company,
absolutely,
I don't have to pay, I don't have to spend all my money, all my investment capital on stuff that Mike already has, like servers and software and all that. He buys that at Online Tech and then provides it to the smaller companies who can then take that and innovate, spend their time innovating.
Right, and you can buy it a sliver at a time. You don't have to buy the whole piece like you used
as
to.
You grow.
And Professor Krishnan, Professor Krishnan, well, it seems what you were saying is precisely because of that, then we've got to change the way we think about doing business, and that's
absolutely
the focus of what you're channeling, challenging people with.
Exactly, because see, you know, in other words, what we're saying is that this cloud computing architecture is, in a way, creating a new level playing field. You know, it's kind of opportunity for innovation and providing new services. It's actually equally open to both large companies and small companies, right? And that means that the flexibility that comes with the cloud, right, at not, you know, kind of a risk sharing basis in terms of you don't have to invest before you kind of start reaping benefits. It's, cloud gives you an opportunity to, you know, invest as you grow and as you go, right?
Right.
In that context, so companies have to think about how are we going to now leverage this flexibility in order to innovate in our business model.
And that's the key. There's the rub, as Shakespeare once said.
Well, you know what was so interesting is that, you know, when I went out and looked for the book, I thought, you know what? This is a great book. I've read most of it now. I've got a few chapters left to read. But we put a link on our website so that anybody else that wants to get this book published in 2008, it seems like you must have just published it yesterday. It's so relevant today.
Dr. Krishnan, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Mike Klein as well. We're looking forward to this event. It's going to be taking place on April the 19th at Online Technologies. If you want to find out more about it, you can find out about the book and also about the event by clicking the link on our homepage. Back in just a minute to talk to Rick Broida about giving up an iPad. Well, we have quite a program today. We've been literally kind of in the clouds there for, I think, for probably many of you who don't understand high technology. But it's neat to know that it's going on here in our part of the world. And as a matter of fact, that this area is kind of glowing with a lot of this great technology input. Somebody is we have in the studio here who is very familiar with all this high tech, but he's a wonderful cheapskate. And we'd like to have him in here because otherwise we probably spend a whole lot more money than we should. And that is Rick Broida is with us. He's with CNET and does the Cheapskate blog. Thank you so much, Rick, for being here as well.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be back.
Welcome to Shauna, by the way, your wife, who's joining you in studio. Thank you so much for being here as well.
And, you know, we're not calling Rick a cheapskate. He calls himself that, right? He writes that blog for a reason. And that's to help all of us save a few bucks.
Right.
Well, along that line, you wrote something that might be heretical to some of the people who are in this studio, and it was entitled "Why I'm Returning My New iPad and Buying a Kindle Fire." Say it's not so.
It is. It is so. I you know, when the new iPad was announced, I kind of like everybody else, I was kind of all caught up in the hype and everything. And I had read these the initial reviews, which were just gushing in praise of the screen and the processor.
The Retina display in particular.
Exactly. Yeah. And I had skipped the iPad 2, so I thought, well, okay, I'm going to indulge myself in the upgrade for this. And when it arrived, I was, I guess, really just had some serious buyer's remorse. Because looking at the screen, I thought, well, yes, it's very pretty, definitely. But putting it side by side with my original iPad, I thought, is this really worth an extra $600 of my money? And I just really got to thinking, no.
So it wasn't necessarily the functionality that had changed on this. It was like some of the new bells and whistles weren't all that you... I mean, it didn't give you much difference in terms of the use?
Exactly right. Exactly. You know, the built-in camera was kind of a big thing. My original iPad didn't have a camera built in. And, you know, kids love to play around with the camera. It's fun to goof around. But to take a picture with a tablet or to take video with a tablet, it's so big.
I think that's just really dorky. Pardon me. Can you imagine somebody holding up a dinner plate like, just stand still while I take...
That's exactly right.
Cal, go ahead. Go ahead, Cal.
You know, I have to say two things. One, I have to agree with you, Foster. I think it's kind of goofy. I just left the funeral, and there was a guy with an iPad, and he was shooting the honor guard as they were doing the – it was a military
video,
funeral.
Right? Yeah.
And he was holding it up, shooting video. Yeah. It looks weird when you're holding up a plate shooting video.
But just think you could see it right in front of you, too.
That's true.
Although,
that's true.
You know.
But the part when Rick here says the gushing reviews – every new product has a gushing review. No one ever introduced, hey, we've got our new product. It's kind of mediocre and boring. So, yeah, I will agree with you.
No, every Apple product has gushing reviews. Yeah. Everything else.
And well, they are wonderful stuff. But anyway, go ahead.
So I am out at my folks' house.
Oh, here we go.
And my brother-in-law asked me what we're going to have on the show today, blah, blah, blah. So I tell him a little bit, and he goes, you know, I really like my Kindle Fire, but I am thinking about an iPad.
Mm.
And so we talk a little bit more about it, and, you know, it's time for dinner, so we're eating, we talk. And my son says, oh, I got to hurry up and finish because the Michigan and Ohio State lacrosse game is on, and he wants to watch it. We went to get my iPad. And we couldn't watch the game going to the U of M site because it didn't have flash technology on my iPad. Just prior to dinner, I helped my brother-in-law get onto his Kindle Fire, and guess what? He went over to that site. He's got full flash. We watched it on his Kindle Fire instead.
So I got to ask the magic question.
Oh, here we go.
When are you taking your iPad back and getting your Kindle Fire?
Well, you know, if I could take it back and get my $800 back and go spend $199 on my Kindle Fire, I'd have done it.
But you could sell it on Craigslist.
Listen, Cal, you
so, think so, actually, so Rick, Eddie, Rick, go ahead, tell us, I was tell us say, a little bit more.
I think this is about Rick, not you two.
Thank you, Rick.
Fair enough. Touché.
The voice of sanity steps in here. Go
now,
ahead.
I do have a legitimate reason to own a new iPad. I do write about them for a living.
Sure.
So, you know, I was very, I wanted to love the thing. I really, really did.
There's a lot to like.
There is a lot to like. It's a wonderful device.
And even though I tease Cal a little bit, I probably won't turn mine in. I like it.
Well,
except for the flash.
If I'm being totally honest, and actually this is the first time I'm admitting this in public, I did not return the new iPad. I kept it
because
I do write about it, and I decided I would eBay the old one.
Shauna,
and keep the new one.
How many times has you used that excuse for keeping stuff, huh?
And Shauna was quiet when, you know, she wasn't,
no,
she was biting
she
her
was
tongue.
She was shaking her head. If we had video, we would have shaking her head. No,
of course, you know,
he didn't do it. He didn't turn it back in. He
now,
kept
that
it.
Said, here, what I brought with me today, I'll just hold it up so everyone can see it,
is the
Kindle Fire. And so what had happened was that while I was experiencing my buyer's remorse over the new iPad, I got my chance to look at the Kindle Fire. A demo unit came from Amazon, and I really was surprised by how much I liked it. Mm-hmm. I liked the interface. I liked the size. I liked the capabilities, and I especially liked the price of it. You know, you're talking $199 versus a $499 entry point for the
entry
iPad.
Entry point, yeah.
This is running, Android, right?
This is running Amazon's specialized version.
Their specialized
of Android,
version.
Yes.
Now, just in terms of size difference, it looks like about half the size of an iPad.
Well, it's a 7-inch screen versus close to a 10-inch screen.
Yes, listeners, we're holding them up.
See,
right
I can
now.
See the difference. Yep, I can see that.
Right,
and but they're going to have to take my word for it. You know, out
I mean,
there
these,
listening
you know,
now.
When you think about these devices, reading books and magazines and other documents is a big Plus.
Yeah.
And I think that this form factor is much more comfortable.
In terms of holding something.
In terms of holding it. Yeah. I like to read in bed, for example. I find that the iPad screen is actually too bright. I find that the device is too large to hold comfortably. Mm. Whereas this, I can just, you know, sit there with, and it's
anywhere,
much
yeah.
more comfortable. Right.
It's one-handed.
And not to even get into a battle, because it's not all about that, really. You have to look at all the devices, figure out the use you want to do with that particular
sure.
device, and then make the choice that makes the best sense for you.
And because there's a huge viewing difference between that 7-inch screen and your almost 11-inch screen. Quite a bit of difference in terms
and
of
to add to that, the Kindle Fire was designed after the original Kindle, which was designed to be an e-reader.
E-reader, exactly.
So it's customized, designed to give you that ease of use, that look and that feel of dealing with a book.
Now, Rick, I want to jump a little bit in here and ask you a question that we've kind of struggled with as a team here. People calling in, especially older listeners who have a certain amount of money to spend, who are moving out of maybe an old technology or have never moved into this. Do you think a tablet is a good thing to move somebody into who has never had computer experience or is not very necessarily literate in terms of computer technology?
Absolutely. I think tablets are kind of a great gateway into this kind of technology. You know, for somebody who is especially an older user or is not accustomed to using Windows, to using the Mac
operating
OS,
systems, et cetera,
exactly.
whatever the operating
system. You know, a tablet
system
has the virtue of being, it's an instant-on device. So you push mm-hmm. a button, it comes on. You don't have to wait 2-3 minutes for it to boot. It's all icon-based, so it's really just a tap of the screen rather than trying to learn
the
to
little
use
pictures
a mouse.
Rather than. Were you going to say something? I'm just wondering if this isn't actually a better form to get somebody into computing with, rather than having something. I know Ben Carpenter's out there saying, "Now wait a minute," because he was on the air with us talking about this. If you give a person a computer, they have a chance to do much more with it than what is first presented to them. With the tablet, you're pretty much limited to what's there. Although the content and the programs are presented in a very easy way. As you said, just touch the little picture for whatever it may be, and boom, it happens.
Right. And I would add that, you know, for just for getting started, you know, if money is no object, between a Kindle Fire or a smaller tablet and an iPad, I really think that the iPad is actually a great place to start. Again, mm-hmm. if you take money out of the equation.
Right. Well, thank you for that, because I've wondered if we aren't, guys, when we direct people, maybe smarter, especially if it's somebody with a little older, not that familiar with technology, to say, start with a tablet.
Definitely.
And especially, you've got some great deals. So, folks, if you go to the Internet Advisor website, internetadvisor.net, you'll see a click off to Rick's article there, and there are many other good ones there. And we look to having you back in the future to talk about cutting the cord on TVs and some of the technologies involved in that. Rick Reuter, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And folks, hold your horses. We're going to be coming back for another hour, and that will be the hour when we will be answering your questions. The number is 1-800-859-0957. 800-859-0957. Get a jump and get online, and we'll get with you in just a short bit after these messages.
You've been listening to a podcast of the first hour of WJR's Internet Advisor.
Thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor for the part of the program that we like the most. And that's when we get to talk with you about your real-world computer problems and find some solutions for you. And we got a whole lot of experience in the studio here with Gary Baker and Ed Rudell and Kel Carson, and a little bit of experience on my part, mostly in screwing up computers.
Well, that's kind of how we all got the experience. We broke it and then had to fix it.
That's exactly it. So if your computer is broke or something's happened to it that you just don't understand, listen, you got no one else to blame if you don't get some answers, because the phone lines are open right now at 800-859-0957. Just dial in there. First come, first serve. We'll set you up, and we'll get your questions answered quickly. As a matter of fact, Eddie, we've got somebody here who's standing in line right away to talk with you and with the rest of the guys here, and that is Linda. Hi, Linda. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. How are you doing?
Oh, fine, thank you. How are you?
Very good. Tell us a little bit about what your concern is, what the problem you have is.
My concern is the best way to back up data, pictures, and music from your computer. I do have an external hard drive, which I have not plugged in yet, but I don't know. There are so many products out there, too, Carbonite, and to name one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to know what your opinion is and maybe the best way to save data so in case the computer crashes,
very
good, you don't lose everything.
Boy, you're asking an excellent question, right, guys?
Oh, she is. I mean, that's the number one concern. You have all this information, and especially in today's with all this external technology, you have people running around with their music or MP3 players or iPods, and those things hold gigabytes of data. Yeah. Now, and that's one of the questions I had for you. Are you using like a MP3 player or music or for playing your music, an iPod?
No.
Okay. So what type of data do you have on your computer? Is it just...
Mostly Word files.
Okay.
Okay.
Files and folders, and then I do have music on there in iTunes.
Oh, okay, so you do have a lot of iTunes stuff.
Lots of pictures.
Okay, there's two ways to look at this. The information that you have on your computer, very important to you, keepsakes, stuff like that you want to keep for a long time, right?
Right.
Okay, if you go with the approach of using the external hard drive, you can't go with one, you have to go with two. I'll tell you the reason why. You're constantly creating more and more data all the time. So what you're going to do is you're going to take, if you go with the external hard drive approach, you're going to take one hard drive, you're going to take it, connect it to the machine right now, copy all the stuff you want to keep, and you got it on that hard drive. You're going to go like, yay, I got it backed up. Then you got to put that hard drive somewhere other than where that computer is. Because if the house burns down, it's all gone. So if that other hard drive's away, let's say stored at a good relative's house or in your safe deposit box, now it's time to back it up again a month or so later. Well, you can use the second hard drive to do that, back it up, and then you switch them from the locations back and forth. That way you always rotate your data in and out, and that's a good way of protecting it.
Now, we're not talking about really a lot of money nowadays, are we?
Because
the price on hard drives has gone back down.
I can get
the externals.
I bet you for the amount of data, and I can guess she's got under 50 gig of data that she needs to back up, she could probably get two 500 gig hard drives for less than 150, maybe $200, mm-hmm. which is a great investment.
Oh, less than that. I mean, I've
I
seen
think
them.
So, yeah.
Yes, less than $75 each, and that's one solution. But that's total protection. Say if you know what's the likelihood of your house burning down? She already has an external hard drive. Why can't she just find a backup program to back up the data or just drag and drop her data to the external hard drive?
Well, she could do
because
that.
Because a computer is more likely to crash than your house burning down.
Yeah. Now, the second way of going about it is to subscribe to one of the external services that back up your computer over the Internet. Now, here's the plus to it. You never have to worry about remembering to do it as long as the computer's turned on and the program for backing up is set up to automatically back you up on a regular basis.
That's usually, what, a monthly fee or fee?
A monthly fee or yearly fee. Normally, if you pay the yearly fee, you get a really good deal on it. That would be your Carbonites. That'd be your Moseys. That would be your Crash Plans. Those are the three that I would
look at. By the way, we should say also that if you are a Hotmail user, Live has a place that you can store stuff in the cloud, if you will. And if you're a Mac user, you also have iCloud where you have a certain amount of storage. Or you could use something like a Dropbox.
Dropbox is good, especially if you have a lot of friends. The more friends you refer to Dropbox that sign up, the more space they'll give you. But it depends on whether that's going to be enough space for her. The reason why I go with the services like Carbonite or Mosey or a Crash Plan is because she doesn't have to remember to do it. All she has to do is to turn on her computer.
Right. And that's one of the limitations with Dropbox and the iCloud is you have to basically drag and drop stuff to a specific folder. Right. You have to remember to do that. And you have probably four or five good folders that you want to back up in the Mac and the PC environment where the total backup solution or cloud-based like Acronis and some of the other ones, or the backup software, they do it automatically for you. Other ones haven't matured enough. They really weren't meant to be a total backup solution yet. A lot of people are using them that way.
Linda, are you hearing some answers here that might be of use to you?
Yes. So something, say, as a Carbonite or Mosey or Crash Plan, those would be good to back up all data and pictures and music as well.
Right, and as Gary used to say, belts and suspenders. You put them together. You know, in other words, you put your stuff off onto that little hard drive. And, you know, identify what you want to keep there. Then also, by the way, be aware of something. When you go to a Carbonite or Mosey or Crash Plan, it's going to take a while for your stuff to get up there. Once it's up there, then it can be done incrementally. So it may take 3-4 days, depending on how much stuff you got. Okay, Linda?
Oh, that's fine.
All right.
Yes, thank you very much for answering my question.
You asked an excellent question as well that I think is going to help a lot of other people. Thanks so much for calling.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. And that's just the start of things. All right. Phone line's still open. 800-859-0957. You heard how it works. You get on the line right now. 800-859-0957. And we will get to your question in just a moment. By the way, there may be some of you out there listening to our program who don't have a chance to call in when we say this, and you, oh, I have a question, I wish I could get it in. We have our forums on the Internet Advisor where 24/7 people are there who are checking in regularly. Ed and Cal and Shane Hamlin, for instance, myself and some of the other people who are regular listeners here and have been helping for a long time. So if you ever have a question that you don't have a chance to send into, you know, call us live for, you can simply go to internetadvisor.net and then you'll see in the corner forums. Click on that and you just put your name in there, a little password, and boom, you're in. And you can put your question in, and a number of people very often will stop by to check out the problem and often give me some very good answers. Right now, however, so we have some more lines open at 800-859-0957. And shame on you if you don't get your question answered, because we got all the folks necessary here to help you. Bill from Ypsilanti, welcome to the Internet Advisor. What may we do for you on the Internet Advisor?
Yeah, I just lost my house, and I don't have access to the Internet anymore, and I was wondering what kind of system or whatever to be able to hook up my laptop to some way. I don't know. I guess from what I understand, Verizon has some kind of deal you could get, and they charge, I think they said $50 for 5 gigabyte a month, or 80 for 10 gigabyte a month, but I don't know how much a gigabyte is to begin with.
That's a, you know, that's a
good
point.
If that was anything worthwhile,
yeah.
Or if there was some other type of satellite gizmo to get to be able to pick up.
Good. Well, that's, you know, you've asked a very good question that people often ask in different ways. If people are traveling, sometimes
right.
We'll ask the same kind of question. So, guys, what would you suggest from your vast experience are some of the options? Eddie?
Well, you know, I always look for free, so the libraries offer free. I mean, if it's something where you can take your tablet or a touchpad or something along those, libraries, McDonald's, right. Bookstores offer them. But if you want to...
By the way, excuse me, when we used to travel, that was how we got our email. We would look for the library, almost any library, and even the tiniest little city, if they've got a library, have got... usually a very good connection to the Internet, and they've got wireless as well.
Yeah, now you can go to McDonald's.
Right. And McDonald's as well, yes.
Okay,
yes,
and then you also have smartphones. So if you already have an existing cell phone, you might want to consider the idea of what would it take to update my plan if you don't already have a smartphone. So like, say if you had a regular phone, update to a smartphone, and a lot of them provide hotspot capability or tethering.
Even even AT&T now, doesn't
AT&T
it?
Yeah,
$20 a month. You can add it to your plan.
That is how much data. That's either 2 or 5 gig.
Well, and actually, it's, I think, 2, 5, and 10.
Yes.
For right. AT&T, and it's 2, 3, and 5, 10, or something like that. For
so, and then the third option, instead of upgrading or finding a smartphone device, is that you could get a MiFi device.
Matter of fact, we're enjoying one right
here. Yeah, the studios, and we have a couple MiFis in here, and we're all tethering off of those.
And the beauty with using a MiFi device is that if you have a family that... needs to share the Internet, you can share up
would
to
you
five
explain
different
yeah, what the devices those, we're the, using right now?
The family that surfs together stays together. Right? They have to. They have to stay within range of the MiFi.
Cal, and both of you have got MiFis going right now. Just tell us what it is, because I'm actually hooked up to Cal's right now.
A MiFi looks like it's a little bit bigger than a credit card, probably about as thick as 10 of them stacked up on top of each other.
Remarkably
so you could
small.
Easily slip it into your pocket. Basically what it is a combination of a cell phone and a wireless router,
right.
All built into this little compact box, and you pay a monthly fee for it, and you turn it on, you put in an access code so everybody and their mother can't jump on your Wi-Fi and use your bandwidth, and then you can give that code up to 4 other people, and they all can share that same Wi-Fi with
and
you.
And they also offer a pay-as-you-go, so you could do monthly as well with MiFis. Verizon offers a plan, T-Mobile, I believe, has one. Where you buy the device and then you pay monthly fees.
And the device isn't all that expensive, is it?
Between $60 and $80, $89.
So there's an investment in the device itself.
If you were to go for the pay for use.
Yeah. Right. And then,
if you buy the subscription.
Ah, okay. Then you get the device.
You get the device.
I gotcha. But then you're on the hook then for 2 years or whatever it is for a certain amount. Does this give you some options then, Bill? Do you understand the options you've gotten so far?
Yeah, well, the thing, I guess that's what Verizon was showing me was the little MiFi thing.
That's exactly it. And I'm hooked up to Kel's right now, for instance. I'm within about 10 feet of him, and it's working wonderfully. But so you've got that.
Now, you may want to add, have you got a Verizon cell phone service already?
Yes, I do.
And do you have a smartphone?
No, I don't, but I'm looking to get one.
Yeah, well, that's why you may want to think of by upgrading to a smartphone device like an Android that provides, or an iPhone that provides the ability to tether either Bluetooth or with a cable.
Or better than that, maybe a smartphone that already has a MiFi built into it.
And yes. Some of them do that.
Yeah, some of them do.
So here's the problem with using Verizon as a hotspot, and that is you can only use voice or data. You can't do both at the same time.
Ah.
And with AT&T, you can use AT&T phones as a hotspot, and you can use voice and data.
Even with their 4G?
Yes.
Interesting.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah,
so just a different technology, you know, using Bill, I GSM make sure, instead of in what Verizon
So
uses.
You've got a range of possibilities here, Bill. Does that help you?
Yes, it did. I appreciate it. You guys are great.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. There's a lot to think of in that, and I'm also thinking that you need to consider how much bandwidth you want to get. So, guys, what would be like, I mean, if you're going to be streaming movies or
you better do that in
audio,
Wi-Fi, or you're going to spend a lot of
money. Yeah, you better find a Wi-Fi
data.
Spot for that, because that's a lot of bandwidth to be using up, and that can become very expensive.
But you can do it with Wi-Fi. So if you do that with your phone can run over Wi-Fi.
As well. So. Yeah, exactly. Okay, Dean from Toledo, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How may we help you?
Yeah, good afternoon, guys.
Thank you.
Well, I want to win my wife over to the Apple world, okay?
Okay.
Now, see, the problem is she still has some programs that run on Windows that aren't offered on the Mac iOS.
Mm-hmm.
So what I was going to do is I was going to buy a MacBook Pro and then put Parallel on it, which allows you to run, I believe, both operating systems, right?
Parallel, by the way, folks, is a virtual operating system. Am I right, Cal? Am I right in saying that?
It sets up a virtual environment that you can load an operating system into. So it's a software alternative that allows you to run a different operating system within the existing operating system on a Mac.
But fair warning, you'll also have to share the resources. In other words, if you have 4 gigabytes of data, of RAM, you're going to have to split that between the two operating systems, essentially, when you're running them.
Correct. So Parallels basically is a little window within a Mac OS.
Exactly. And in that, for instance, now you would have to install your own version of like Windows 7 onto that virtual machine. So you'd have to have that, okay?
Okay.
And then she could run anything that could run on Windows 7.
He's a Mac user. He's going to go to any extreme he can to let his wife experience the Mac, even if it's in the background.
Now, I'm going to tell you something, by the way. Cal, I don't know if you've used this, but I'm running, for instance, Windows 8 on something called VirtualBox, which I believe is a virtual Windows.
It is also a virtual machine, which you can sit up
but it's free.
On a Mac. And yes, it is free.
And that's a whole lot better than either Fusion or Parallels. It's free, and it seems to be working well.
Of course, you can also go the free method by doing a dual boot on your Mac by setting up Boot Camp and loading Windows over there. So it's in a separate environment all to itself.
Yeah, but then you would have either Windows or Mac that you'd be running.
Correct.
Whereas with a virtual machine, Dean, she could be running her regular Mac programs and then also have the Windows programs running on it as well.
But if you use Boot Camp, you don't have to split your resources either.
No, that's exactly right.
So there's pros and cons both ways. Yeah.
So does that give you some idea?
Well, I've got one follow-up question to that.
Mm-hmm.
Say I got something like Fusion or Parallel, and I try to get her to only use the iOS Mac.
Mm-hmm.
She goes on the Internet. Would she still be, you know, prone to get viruses on the Windows side?
She'll be prone to get viruses from whatever operating system she's using at the time. So if she's using a Windows operating system, she'll get Windows-type viruses. And if she's using the Mac operating system, if there's some out there that you'll run into, there'll be some Mac viruses.
So you will have to put antivirus onto that Mac Windows.
On
the Windows machine part.
On both sides.
Partition.
Yeah.
There's many fewer in the Mac world.
Right.
The antivirus that you load for the Windows machine won't protect the Mac, and if you load antivirus for the Mac, it won't protect Windows.
So is that clear, Dean?
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. I guess one question is, if you get a virus in the PC environment, Windows environment, could it damage the Mac environment?
We will have to ponder these things, little grasshopper, and come back with an answer in just a moment. We've got Craig waiting and Art and you too at 800-859-0957, the Internet Advisor.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. For the latest up-to-the-minute technology news, check out the Internet Advisor's blog at internetadvisor.net.
Thank you once again for joining us. By the way, thanks so much to Annie Nichols and Rich Lozinski, who are the people behind the glass making the program work. Thank you so much, folks. Annie's the young lady who is answering their phones here. And matter of fact, before we leave our program, Rich, remind me that we've got to play the Mac Minute. I almost forgot that. And that is Mr. Eric Anderson is provides us.
How much time do you think
the
we should set aside?
The Mac Minute. Thank you very much.
Out of sight, out of mind. How much time should we set aside for that?
A minute.
Okay.
He tells me just a minute for that. All right, let's go back out to our phone. And by the way, that phone number is 800-859-0957. Stop laughing at me. Craig from Shelby Township. Hello.
Ohio.
Pardon me. It's Ohio. You're right.
It's been a while. Hey, I think I might be able to help Bill just a little bit real quick.
Yeah.
Because I've had both. I've had Verizon. Oh. And I've still got Virgin Mobile just to plug in USB.
Yeah. How's that work?
It's good. Reception, who knows about that? You know, it depends what you're doing, where you're at. It can be a little bit slow sometimes, but see, I don't do movies or all my stuff's business.
Yeah,
taxes.
Yeah.
You're
going to be streaming stuff. First
so
of
how
all,
much?
You're asking.
So how much? Typically, with no movies, how much data were you using per month?
Less than 5,000 kilobytes.
Megabytes. So that'd be five.
Megabytes.
Less than five
megs. That's only 5 megs.
And what's your monthly cost for that unit?
For the Virgin Mobile or the Verizon?
The one that you're using.
The Virgin Mobile was $50 a month, okay. But there's no contract. You just buy
pay
a
as you
card
go.
Or
oh, I got you. But
it.
Then you have the limits, I would imagine, about the reach of the Virgin Mobile system, right?
No, reception really has been pretty good, even in rural environments.
Where's Shelby, by the way? Where's Shelby in Ohio?
It's about 70 miles south-southwest of Cleveland.
Oh, okay. Well, it's interesting. I wouldn't have thought that Virgin would have had much of a reach down there. Verizon, I would imagine, but not Virgin.
Verizon, yeah. I can't say for Virgin. What was really cool was my girlfriend and I was down navigating the real Amish country there. That's where it's not commercialized.
Yeah.
The one
not too many hot spots.
We had the Verizon picking up live Doppler. We're dodging thunderstorms and doing a GPS down the roads and stuff. It was a blast.
No kidding. And it was with the Verizon, huh?
On my HP Mini, yeah.
Yeah. That Verizon, their system really blankets the country well.
You know, I got a feeling some of the Amish are hiding their laptops in the back of the buggy.
Yeah.
Well, they got antennas on top of some of their silos.
And they're a little, I thought they were outhouses. They're actually phone houses where they had the telephones outside the property, you know, where the folks.
No, I mean, they get money. They don't use the service, but they get a monthly fee for somebody.
Oh, yes, I see what you mean.
They're leasing the silos, the cell towers.
Right, and Virgin Mobile, I just confirmed, uses the Sprint network. It leases the Wi-Fi
space.
That's
how it works. I wondered, because I didn't think they had one. So
hey, as fast as they change, how could you possibly keep track? I mean, these companies change, like, buy up, like the wind changes direction, you know?
Okay, so you're suggesting also if somebody wants to get the internet and, you know, doesn't have in this case, a person didn't have a home now, that you could get like the Virgin Mobile, you have a USB plug, a little dongle you plug into it?
Yeah, well, it's just, it looks like a flash drive, just a little bit bigger.
Yeah, and that's what you use for reception.
$89 for it.
So there you pay outright for that, and then you pay on a per-use base.
Yep. Yeah, you just, whatever you want or need, there's a million different packages. I mean, you just got to shop.
Any other questions you had for us, by the way?
Yeah, what's the deal with cordless mouses? I mean, the prices of them, like, doubled in the last 2 years. I've seen.
I agree.
I think it's because it's what the market will bear. If Gary was here, he'd probably say the same thing. Yeah. I remember buying some stuff just a few, like you said, and the prices have doubled. And I'm like, but that was only $10 last year. Now it's $23.
Yeah.
Come on. And people are willing to pay the price. They're going to jack the prices up.
I think it's just demand. That's my sense. Cal, you have any thoughts on that?
Nope, none at all.
I think it basically is demand. None of the technology is different. It's not like, when they had the floods in Thailand and the, a lot of the components of the hard drives were underwater.
Yeah. I mean, the only other thing I think that might drive that is if the wireless mice are now going more to Bluetooth from the old RF.
Oh.
And so because of that, Bluetooth's more expensive.
Well, it's licensed. Yeah, it's a licensed product, I think.
Oh, then that... Well, that's
the other thing I might have been thinking was, too, is because the USB you get was about the size of an F key on a laptop.
Yes.
If you drop it,
you're
good
lost.
Luck finding it.
You're right. You know, that's a very good point. These little USB, the dongles, the nubs are so
USB
small.
Nubs more and more laptops have Bluetooth already in them.
Yeah.
And by not having a mouse that would use that or any other peripheral like that,
yes,
it saves you having that one extra piece to carry.
Yes, but good luck trying to find a USB mouse or a Bluetooth mouse that's truly compliant with Bluetooth standards. That's why they come with them nubs, because there's very few of them. Yeah. I haven't searched through in about a year.
You're right.
They're all proprietary.
Now, I got to say,
hey,
if you all...
A basic question real quick.
Yeah.
And everybody asks, batteries, okay, for our laptops.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a place or a source, or I don't know if you guys can recommend whoever, but...
Oh, like
on, different
online?
Things, like,
a good online source for batteries?
Well, besides the manufacturer?
How you can get the best quality at the cheapest price.
Well, the manufacturers is where I would go, but you're right. I mean, and there's a place by me, what is it, 1-800 batteries or something like that, where remember they used to say, we got that. How about my hair needs?
Yeah.
We got that.
It was on, yeah. It was every...
Yep, got that.
Yeah,
yep, got that.
They'll actually crack the case
open.
And replace the batteries in there for you. Sometimes they have to replace the circuitry because the manufacturers that have these batteries, if you let that thing completely die, it flips a bit in there and basically says, thou shalt never use this battery case again. And you have to rewrite and you can't just replace the batteries in there.
Wow.
They make it so you cannot replace the batteries.
Wow.
Because there's such a profit in it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if Tom Dyroff were here, he probably would have a good cheapskate answer for it. But
you know, I would say shop the internet.
Yeah.
If you can
don't
find,
buy used.
If you can find no, never, but never, never, ever, ever, never, never, never buy used.
I think we got that. Yes.
Yes. and just shop the internet until you can find a place that has a good price for it.
Yeah. I have no inroads.
If it's real cheap, it's probably not a good battery. If it's too expensive, you're probably paying too much.
Yeah. And I haven't. I have no inroads and no insight on any special places.
No.
All right.
You just
well, I got to do it. I've got to do it on both mine. So my HP and my Dell. So I'll let you know how it comes out.
Yeah, do that, please.
Please, yeah.
Just give it. Drop us an
discover.
Email. Let us know. Okay, Greg. Thanks a million for your call. Let's move on to Art, who is in Pinckney. Hi, Art. How are you doing? And what can we do for you here at the Internet Advisor?
Well, you guys were talking about the MiFis with mm-hmm. Verizon and the one that's fixing the USB, the 4Gs.
Mm-hmm.
And I got news for you.
What's that?
I'm paying for both of them, and in Pinckney and Howell, I get about 30% of what I pay for.
Mm.
Because the signal is always 3G, unless I'm on a portable down on US 23 in Brighton, and then it'll go to 4G.
Yeah, yeah.
Or if I'm down in Florida and I'm where there's 4G.
Yeah.
But I'm very disappointed. I've had cable starting out cheap, going up to $70 a month.
Yep.
But new customers can get it for $20.
For a period of time, for a very limited period of time. I think it's 6 months. They really have clamped down on that. It's not like forever. It's a very limited time, and then they have the nasty surprise.
I hear you.
I don't know.
I'm looking at satellite. What do you think?
Ooh,
satellite's even slower.
Oh Lord, yes.
Yeah, because it actually is a telephone line for going up.
Yeah,
Comes down to the satellite. You know, and you're just like TV channels interrupted through storms, so will your internet. So all your mouse clicks and keyboard movements and everything going up to the internet uses a traditional telephone line, or some of them are actually using Wi-Fi device or MiFi devices or, you know, cellular.
Well, I don't have a telephone, so, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like
you
have a, I'm talking at.
They're not going to put a transmitter that from your backyard up to space. They don't do that.
Well, hey, you know, I'm just curious because I
know a great question.
You know, in some areas where they have poor reception, there are Wi-Fi solutions. Companies will actually, but it's a line
and,
of sight.
Know,
it's
and
line
I thought
of sight.
Pinckney was one of those areas. We had a guest on that was doing one of the Michigan wireless things.
Yeah,
and I thought Pinckney was a pilot area for wireless.
Have you looked into that?
No, I haven't. I wouldn't know where to look.
What's the website you go to for finding providers in areas?
I don't know, but the other thing I would suggest is call Verizon up and say, hey, look, I'm paying this amount of money for the service. You tout this being 4G, and I'm not getting the type of throughput. What can you do to fix this, either by fixing the service in my area or, better yet, drop my price?
Well, I went to the home show out in Howell. Mm-hmm. before I had to go out of the state for 3 weeks, and I talked to a gal there, and I'm going to call her because I'm really frustrated. You're putting out almost $100 a month, and you're only getting 20-30% max.
Raise a stink. I'm seeing there's a site called broadband.gov, broadband.gov, that may tell you what some of the service providers are in a particular area. But we're going to try to find that. We'll look for that. I think there is a website you can go to that will tell you who the providers are in your area. And we'll see if we can find that and put that up on our website for you. Okay? All right. Thank you so much for your call. Hey, coming back in just a minute for Grace, Paul, and some other people who are calling in to the Internet Advisor. We're here for you at 800-859-0957. We have some interesting information for you, by the way. For those of you who are looking for the broadband providers in your area, Cal just discovered this. I was trying to think of it, racking my brains for it, and it's connectmi.org, right, Cal? What does that give you when you go to that site?
Oh, when you go to that site, it gives you a choice of a lot of different things on seeing the different types of broadband services that may be offered in your area. You can go in, you can pick your county, and they'll show you maps of your particular county and what type of broadband service is offered in the area around your particular location in a color code.
A fair warning, if you're colorblind like me, you won't be able to do much with the maps. But in any case, they're great maps, and this is a program that has been going on here in the state of Michigan, at least. And matter of fact, nationally, you'll find this information as well as available. Great source for you. It's connectmi.org, and that will get you to the Michigan. And if you're listening outside of Michigan, you can also connect and see where the other broadband providers are. Now, this is important because while the big phone companies want to let you know that they're out there to provide this, sometimes in rural areas, there are providers who will provide direct line of sight like microwave, where you have a little dish antenna on your own home. And if you've got that line of sight, they will send it right to your home, and then you've got a good connection. And it's often a very good connection.
Yes.
It's a very fast connection that's going on there. So it's well worth looking into. Let's get back on to our... Oh, before we do that, we've got himself, Eric Anderson, and the Mac Minute for you.
This week on the Mac Minute, viruses and security. Apple released its Flashback tool this week. The tool can be used to remove the Flashback virus that has infected Mac users with old versions of Java installed on their system. The program will search a Mac user's computer for traces of the virus, then remove them. In addition to the tool, Java updates and Apple patches were also released this week to prevent further Flashback virus infections. The virus has infected over 600,000 Macs so far. The free Flashback removal tool is available now at Apple.com and requires macOS Lion to work. Also this week, Apple has rolled out a new security measure for iTunes and the App Store. The company is asking some users to fill out several security-related questions, such as who was your first teacher, to help verify account ownership in the event of a future security breach. For now, the questions are not being asked of all users. It's presumed those who were asked had several previous security issues with their Apple accounts. The security feature could roll out to all users in the near future. For the Internet Advisor and the MacMinute.net, I'm Eric Anderson, and that's the Mac Minute, give or take a few seconds.
Thank you very much, Eric, and we do that every week. Eric brings us the latest in the headlines from Macworld. All right, let's get back to our phone lines and say hello to Grace, who is with us. Hi, Grace, how are you?
Just fine. Well, no, I'm not quite fine. I do have a problem.
That's why you're calling. Good, thank you. Let's see if we can help things.
One of you guys on that program really usually recommended the Avast program for an antivirus.
Yep.
And recently I realized that my little icon had a little X at the bottom of it.
Uh-oh.
And it wasn't running. And I can't find anywhere where there is a fix for this, and it just keeps stopping me. I can't even remove the program. It says there's a problem with that, too.
Mm. Well, you know, I like Avast. I like it because it's free, and I like it because it protects you. But it sounds like, for some reason, yours is broken. Now, your antivirus program could be broken because either your, something happened, your computer crashed, and it damaged Avast, or you have a virus that actually damaged Avast. So And if you can't uninstall it, I mean, I would suspect that there might be a Windows problem.
Did you try to uninstall it when you were in safe mode, or did you try to uninstall it in normal mode?
No, I was in normal mode all the time.
Okay.
And one of the reasons that I didn't go that far was that I went online to the forums, and there's any number of people that are having the same problem.
Okay. Really? You know, Avast makes a utility that actually is an Avast uninstaller. So instead of relying on Windows to manually or to uninstall the program, you could download a utility from Avast, it's a separate program that'll delete all the Avast programs, go into the registry and delete those entries, allowing you then to download either another version of Avast or another antivirus program.
So,
or download like Microsoft Security Essentials.
I was going to say, now did you pay for this, Grace?
No, this was the free one.
Okay.
And in fact, one of the comments on one of the forums was one person did get the program back, but they had to upgrade to either the next or the next pay program. Then it seemed to work fine.
Well, here's what I would do. I would go to, avast.com, and you can search for the utility, and I'll give you the utility name. Or you could type this into Google, but the utility name is ASW. That's Apple Sam Wicker. Clear, C-L-E-A-R.
C-L-E-A-R.
Yep, okay. .exe. And that is a utility that will, like I said, go in there and manually remove the old-fashioned way, the hard way, and Avast will be gone. And that, what version of Windows are you running?
I still have XP.
Okay. I would suggest normally Microsoft Security Essentials, but, you know, and I still might do
that. Yes, I would say yes.
Well, actually, I have that.
Well, then you may have a conflict. You may have a conflict between the two systems.
Yeah.
So your Microsoft Security Essentials is the whole thing. It's the whole Swiss knife. It's the whole package. So you can't, but because I think what you're having now is a conflict between antivirus programs, and they do not play well in the same sandbox. So I really would suggest what Ed had suggested is going to, you know, searching for that. It's called the ASWClear.exe free download. But anyway, when you look for that, you'll find that Avast itself has the uninstall utility, and you can just download that from Avast, and it'll wipe it off the system. Then I suggest rebooting, and then making sure that you update your Microsoft Security Essentials. Make sure it's updated. But I think you've got a conflict between the two of them.
They've been working together for months. However, that doesn't mean they haven't decided they don't like each other.
Yes, they do not like one another. One's kicks sand in the other's face. So you can simply avoid that. I asked the question about whether you had bought the utility, and then you would want to do some other things. But if it's free, then I would suggest going with Microsoft's Security Essentials. They seem to be good. Okay.
Okay.
All right, Grace. Thank you very much for asking that question. I know a lot of people, you know, may find themselves in the same situation. Paul from Flint, how may we help you here on the Internet Advisor?
Hi, guys. I know that you're running up against the clock. I'll make it quick. I've got a drive that is an old ATA drive that I put into a new computer that I built about a year ago. Mm-hmm. And it functions just perfectly, except when the computer goes to sleep, it won't wake back up. I have to reboot in order to see the drive again and get at the contents. I've gone through CMOS, I've gone through BIOS, I've gone through power settings. About the only thing I haven't really done is a firmware update. And that just came to mind as I was sitting here listening to you guys. Mm. Any ideas?
So this is a secondary drive. It's not the operating system drive.
Correct. Yeah, it's just a data drive.
An old drive you took out.
Yeah, and it sounds like, Cal, help me remember this. Remember in Windows in the days, there was two different power schemes. There was the there was the old chipset power scheme and the new chip power scheme, and I don't remember. You may want to
I bet Microsoft has a solution center though.
Before I go there, who's the manufacturer of the drive?
It's Western Digital.
I'd go out to Western Digital's website, put in that drive serial number, and then go look under the features for it. They may have an additional jumper that you have to set on the back of that drive for that.
Good idea. Good idea.
I didn't think of that. And see if they have drivers specific for that. I sort of doubt it, but they may, or firmware, like you were saying.
Okay.
Very good.
But thanks. Thanks for
good
the question,
ideas, guys.
All right. Take care. Thanks so much. Hey, Floyd, hang on a second. We'll take you after the program. For the rest of you out there, thank you so much for joining us. And if another question comes up, don't forget we have our forums open at internetadvisor.net. Guys, thanks so much for being here. Ed, Cal, and Gary, it's good being with you. And also Annie and Rich, thanks so much for being with us as well. We will see you here soon, same time, on the Internet Advisor. In the meantime, have a good day.
You've been listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. To hear previous podcasts, visit our webpage at internetadvisor.net.